From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made last month on CNN, which aired an 8-part documentary series devoted to stand-up comedy. It was called The History of Comedy, and one subject in particular stood out to us. It was called Spark of Madness. And you don't need me to tell you that some of the names of comedians who either died young or struggled with mental illness or both, I mean, part of the list, John Belushi, Chris Farley, Robin Williams, we could really go on, and we might wonder if creating great art and great comedy requires some level of personal turmoil. CNN points out that it was Gilbert Gottfried who noted that, quote, it's not unusual for people to lament after a tragedy like Robin Williams' suicide in 2014, how someone could be so buoyant and talented and yet so plagued by demons and excesses, end quote. So this hour, we're building on that episode by inviting a panel of comedians to share their own experiences. We'll discuss whether personal struggles should ever be off limits in comedy acts. We'll explore whether comedians create jokes for themselves or more for the audience. And the process of creation is fascinating, given how many comedians have to weigh their own struggles. Let me go ahead and welcome our guests for the hour. All of them stand-up comedians and veterans in comedy on the local scene. Andrea Springer is here. Welcome, Andrea.
Thank you so much.
Kyle Baker is here. Welcome to you, Kyle.
Thank you for having me.
And Kelsey Claire Hagen is here. Welcome to you.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I wanted to let you know Kelsey Claire's got a show that does include a word that the current president has used and actually riffs off that a little bit. So you may hear that. And that's the disclaimer. That disclaimer is out of the way. There's so much ground that we could cover with this. And I guess I just want to start with a general question, and I'll go around the room and I'll start with Andrea here. You know, why don't you tell us a little bit about how you view the question that CNN tried to explore, which is, you know, personal struggles, sometimes mental illness or different challenges, and how they work into comedy. For you, that means what?
For me, that does include an element of reclamation and taking things that I've struggled with for my entire life and making them into something that A, helps me relate to people, and B, frames it in the way that I want to frame it. And I think that connecting with people and being able to kind of successfully get my genuine feelings over that I feel like I'll be rejected for, but telling that in the form of a joke makes me feel like I have a connection with people.
All right, and to the extent that you want to share, for you, what are those things?
Sure. I have major depressive disorder, and I have generalized anxiety disorder, and then the anxiety disorder includes a number of obsessive compulsive tendencies.
Okay. Kelsey Claire, same question for you.
I would say that mostly I just feel a sense of control when I go up on stage. It's not a common thing these days to watch a woman speak for more than 5 minutes alone, uninterrupted with a microphone these days. And I think that that's for women and like minorities, that's like a huge reclamation of power. I like to talk about my own experiences when it comes to like sexual assault or rape, and I think that I have the right to do that because I'm going against like the fray. I'm not like talking about what the patriarchy kind of like lets people talk about. I giving a new experience, but I don't think that applies to everybody who makes rape jokes. But I think that's.
All right, we'll explore that more as we go throughout the hour. Kyle Baker, same question for you.
For me, a lot of my struggles is telling friends and family like what's going on, like emotionally or what's going on in my head. So, I mean, I love making people laugh. It's just always something I like doing. But I've noticed recently that I've been using it more to paint a picture of what I struggle with, and also try to make it so that people can. Like certain aspects of what I go through, I know other people go through, and I kind of paint that picture and also like to draw them in. It's like, hey, you're not the only person that thinks or feels this way, and make fun of it.
Okay, and for you, that challenge is what?
I would say spiraling into brief spouts of insanity. A lot of anxiety. I suffer from borderline personality disorder, so I suffer from struggling with identity and finding a place in life and amongst peers and whatnot. bunch of other stuff. Yeah, but definitely anxiety and depression mixed in as well.
I'll start with you, Kyle, and I'll ask you if you guys agree with comedian Jim Norton, who wrote, quote, "The funniest people I know seem to be the ones surrounded by darkness, and that's probably why they're the funniest. The deeper the pit, the more humor you need to dig yourself out of it," end quote. Yes or no, Kyle?
I would say yes. I mean, there's obviously exceptions of comics that, you know, might not struggle or had a troubling childhood. But when I reflect upon that, I realize that a lot of the people that I'm close friends with, or I'm able to share my stories or my life, is people that also have very dark things going on in their life or have experience. And I don't want to say it's like a bomb, but it's just this level of comfortability you don't always experience with people, you know, day to day, that, you know, people that you work with or something.
Okay. Kelsey Claire?
I would say that, like, we were talking about this before, but once you've experienced depression and you've, like, have so many self-deprecating thoughts, like, you've experienced these awful things, and it makes you more sympathetic towards other people who might have experienced that, or just people in general. And I think it really ups your emotional IQ. And I think that is something that's very necessary to be a good comedian, because you have this ability to talk to the audience as though you're having a conversation with them, and, like, respond to their body language and, like, the mood in the room. And I think that's like a make or break thing. I obviously, like you said, there's many exceptions to this, but I think that connection is very important.
Okay.
I wanted to bring up something actually from Parks and Rec, because there's a moment in Parks and Rec where Leslie Knope asks Ann Perkins to write a joke for her, and then she's like, "Oh, of course it's not funny, Ann. You're so beautiful. You've never had anything to compensate for." And that really rings true in a lot of ways for me. I think that people who were comfortable socially or very popular growing up, they often aren't that funny. And I think it's because they didn't need to develop a coping mechanism, which humor definitely is, to, like, feel like they are someone worth being around.
Is this why, like, Mitt Romney can only tell dad jokes? He's the, like, most unfunny person?
Definitely.
Like, the most privileged people, good-looking people. Like, yes. I'm sorry, I just thought of Mitt Romney. Terrible dad joke. But Andrea said something before the hour began that I'd like to touch on here, which is that one thing that you hear often in the comedy world is comedy is therapy.
Yeah.
And I know you hear that, and, you know, tell us what you said before the hour.
Yeah, absolutely. I talked to a lot of people, and a lot of these people are neurotypical and maybe aren't really thinking. And I think that comedy can be therapeutic. Absolutely, it is for me. But for me, going to therapy is therapy. So I
don't mean to be laughing at that. I mean, it's the funny construction.
No, absolutely. That's. I mean, it's a joke. So absolutely. And I think that kind of minimizes, like, for some people that could actually benefit from medical health services, that could benefit from therapy, that could benefit from medication. If you are really struggling with those issues, then, like, being a comedian is not going to do it. It's not going to help you. Like, well, it's going to help you, but it's not going to solve your problems.
Yeah.
Interesting. Let's listen to what Robin Williams had to say on Charlie Rose in 2009 about comedy as a survival mechanism, and then we'll let the other guests also weigh in on that. This is Robin Williams on Charlie Rose.
Have you ever bought that there's some connection between comedic talent?
Well, comedic talent is the way that, you know, survival mechanism. Yeah, I buy into that.
Did you have to get out demons?
I don't know. No. Where are they?
You know where we are, Robbo. We hang right here. The demons, where are they? Let me live with you, boy.
In a way, it's just eerie and sad to hear that.
Yeah.
But he's saying comedy can be a survival mechanism. Andrea Springer saying therapy is therapy. Comedy can be therapeutic, but, you know, it doesn't replace therapy. What do you think, Kelsey Claire?
I think, like, in the vein of how people treat comedy in that way, again, it's helped me through a lot, like, so much. But I think Robin Williams is a great example of this. Like, people really romanticized his suicide. They really made it, like, this, like, picturesque, like, of course, like, we always fly too close to the sun, and, like, we all have an Achilles heel. And it's not really, like, something to just consider and ponder about afterwards. Like, it's real. Like, we all feel it a lot, and it's important for comedians to get real help. And I think in the article they talked about how they had like an in-house comedian, like psychologist at like, well, I don't know, I can't remember the place, but I think that's really important to like really work on your issues on and off stage.
Okay, Kyle Baker.
Well, just to kind of piggyback off that about the whole romanticizing of depression, that seems to be a big thing lately. And I kind of want to go to a different comic. For me, one of the huge inspiration in my life is Maria Bamford.
Yeah.
Now, a lot, at least I've noticed over the past couple of years, really talented comedians sharing their dark views, whether it's in stand-up or in, you know, TV format. But when her show came out, Lady Dynamite, it was so awesome to watch something different, because she struggles with a lot of mental health issues, but she was able to present it in a way that was, I was able to laugh at it, because I'm like, crying all the time is something I need to not do as much. So like being able to watch something really helpful. But to go back, I don't like that term, because it is therapeutic in a way that for me, it's, I'm able to talk about these dark things, and when you get a response from the crowd, that's the sort of therapy aspect, at least for me. I think that probably when that was coined was just, it was just very general. And I don't know, that's, it's kind of the, like we were talking about, that the term's kind of, I understand it, but it's not completely accurate. Just the same with the whole sad clown thing.
Well, this is interesting. You mentioned when you get a response from the crowd, that can feel maybe briefly therapeutic.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Let's hit this, but let me let Sarah Silverman set us up, because, you know, if you're going to choose to write comedic material about your own personal struggles, whether it's borderline personality disorder or, you know, there's a lot of rape jokes in comedy, and the question of, you know, is that over the line? Is that inbounds? Or is that over the line for some but not others based on circumstances, or whatever the case may be? Everybody's got a different opinion on what sort of inbounds, out of bounds. Sarah Silverman was on Larry King in 2010. He was still doing a show in 2010. And and the subject came up, is there anything out of bounds? Because, you know, there are certain things that she jokes about that seems really, you know, strong, or, you know, maybe rub people the wrong way. And she had an interesting response about material that for her is stuff that she, a place she doesn't want to go.
A lot of people say, you joke about rape and AIDS and this and everything, but I'm not joking about those things. I think that's more of a reflection of people reacting to buzzwords and not really listening to the content or the context. You know, I'm almost always the idiot in my jokes, and the subject matter just happens to be about dark things.
Okay, so she's saying that when she brings up things like rape, it's not necessarily really joking. She went on to say that the only thing that she doesn't really want to joke about is women's weight. Mm-hmm. So I want to go around the table and just kind of get a sense for what our guests, again, who are all in on the local comedy scene, think about what they heard from Sarah Silverman, how it relates to their work. And then in particular, if you do choose to go there in your material, do you need a reaction to feel either validated or like it was worth it, or is it more for you? So it's a complicated cake I just baked, but Andrea, I'll start with you. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that she is right that you can write a joke about an issue without the joke being, you know, if it's a rape joke, the joke should never be that, like, that somebody gets raped. Like, that's not a joke. But you can, and I've seen a lot of mostly female comedians do it very successfully, where they joke about rape culture and they joke about the way that that makes them feel, and like kind of like placing it, positioning it as absurd. And I wanted to speak a little bit to the weight issue, because I am like an overweight comedian. And like, I'll just say like fat, because that's like the word that I use to describe it as like a reclamation. But I think that if the joke is that somebody is fat, like, that's not really a joke. But I have a lot of material about weight and being fat in my routine. But a lot of that is like, oh, isn't it ridiculous that like skinny people don't think that fat people are people? Like, I just, it's able, a way for me to take power back, because I kind of position that as absurd, and I position that as the joke is on the people who are judgmental like that.
So weight is something that's inbounds for your comedy if there's a message that goes with it, if there's a meaning for it?
Yeah. And I think because it's something that I struggle with and something that I have struggled with for my whole life, I think I'm able to come at it from a more sensitive topic. And I'm definitely not saying that if you're a really slim person that you can't make those jokes, but you'd have to be really careful about how you do it.
Yeah, I understand. And if the audience is really into it versus if the audience, if it kind of doesn't land, mm-hmm. how does that impact you and your decision to include that kind of material?
It's funny you bring that up. Multiple different people have approached me, other comedians that I really respect, and they say, try to make the audience less sad than you're making them now. That's come up for me.
They've said you make the audience sad?
Yeah, they've said that I make the audience sad because, like, it really is funny to me because, you know, it's where I'm living. But a lot of people, it doesn't come across that way. Like, if I do a set at a club, then I make sure that I just tell my jokes that don't have to deal with mental illness or weight or anything like that, because it creates this sort of tension that that they are kind of like sitting there like, oh, like, should we call somebody? Like, I'm worrying about her. Like, is she okay?
Okay. Kelsey Clare, and, you know, Sarah Silverman talked about rape in that response to Larry King. And, you know, rape jokes, inbounds, out of bounds. How do you view that?
I guess, well, and as I touched on before, I think that, like, I hate to say this, but an older man like goes up there and makes a joke about rape that's like it's not complicated. It doesn't have layers to it. It's not satirical. Like, you're just like yelling into the void, because we've seen that a million times for decades on decades. Like, if you're gonna go on stage, like, it better be something new and it better challenge people, like, because otherwise, what's the point, you know? I've publicly said that I don't think rape jokes should be done, if not done, like, in a smart way. And, like, someone came up to me and was like, yeah, but you joke about sex all the time. And I was like, yeah, I joke about consensual sex. I was like, if you think that sex and rape are the same thing, you have a lot to learn.
That's so horrifying, it's almost comedy.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. There's my opener. But, yeah, you really do have to, like, tiptoe around your certain audience. Like, you really have to, like, you know, obviously we have rooms that we all do that I can do my stance on abortion, I can talk about politics, and everyone's in agreement. And there's rooms that you don't do that, and it kind of sucks, but, like, it's better to respect, like, that relationship with the audience than not. And it kind of just makes your life a little easier sometimes.
Okay, and if you're talking about abortion,
yeah.
If you choose to bring in issues like sexual assault and rape, and it doesn't land, again, versus if the audience is there with you, does that change how you feel about the set and the material?
Yeah, I used to do this joke that was kind of about what my own experience, and it was, like, the punchline revealed a lot. And sometimes people would laugh, but I could tell that most of them were laughing because they were uncomfortable. And although I, like, loved that time, I love watching videos of me doing that joke, and I, like, love the feeling I got by, like, telling a room full of people, like, this happened to me. This literally happens to so many women in comedy and, like, just everywhere. I don't like to do it because I can't feel connected with people, because it's not something people talk about in, like, the general discussion. But yeah.
You can feel the difference between genuine laughter and uncomfortable laughter.
Yeah, definitely. It's harsh. Yeah.
Okay.
It's not fun.
Kyle Baker, what do you think?
One of the main things since I've started doing stand-up that I have trouble with is I'm here to entertain, but I want to do it in such a way that I'm in control of it. So I would go through these cycles of I would write really dumb, silly things when I retrospectively, like analyze. We're like, I don't really like that. That's not really what I talk about. But you want to get something from the audience. So I would struggle through like, how do I don't know. I guess a lot of it too is figuring out my voice and what I do want to talk about. I mean, when I started doing it, I just liked making people laugh. But I guess when you start doing it, you kind of start to get the rhythm and the writing patterns down, and you kind of start to see where you what you like doing, what you don't like doing. So, I mean, still, even, you know, like last night, I was just like, do I talk about the quick, dumb things just to get something? But if I'm going to try really new, raw things about what I've been going through the past few months, you might get a lot of those uncomfortable laughters.
What's a quick, dumb thing that's an easy laugh but doesn't feel as good to you? What's a subject? Dating, things like that?
Yeah, I really, unless it's specific to like I would tell a joke, but it was related to mental health. I don't like talking about dating. I don't like talking about politics. I mean, I pay attention to those things in the real world, but that's just not what I want.
Donald Trump jokes are probably really hard to do originally right now.
it's a lot of material for people, but it's just not my, what he's been doing to my mental health, that's something I want to talk about.
Okay, so you relate it to the experience of either BPD.
Yeah,
or
it okay. Just since November, my depression, anxiety, and over empathetic black hole I've gone down very far.
Well, and Kyle and really all three of our guests, if you're just joining us, we're talking about we're piggybacking off CNN. They did an 8-part documentary series on the history of comedy, and they looked at it in one of the segments about the link sometimes between mental illness or personal struggle with comedy, and whether that darkness is either necessary or even helpful to comedians to create material, but how it impacts their life. And our guests are all in the comedy scene. You're hearing Kyle Baker, Kelsey Claire Hagen, Andrea Springer. Jill writes to us, and let me start with you, Kyle. We'll go around the table here because we're talking about what's comfortable, what's uncomfortable, you know, how you can notice the difference between, wow, that was funny versus, wow, they are just laughing because they may think they have to, and that's just, is it really landing? Jill writes and says, how do you walk the line of being funny and relatable using even tragedy in comedy with ensuring the audience is still comfortable and actually laughs? I don't know that you have to. I mean, you can do whatever you want, but do you care if the audience is comfortable?
No. I mean, I care about sharing this story. I mean, I don't want to say I'm telling a story, but I want them to be drawn in, and I want them to feel comfortable with being uncomfortable, if that makes any sense. Yeah. I want them to invite them into my darkness with holding their hand. I don't know. That's stupid.
No, I know. I mean, yeah. When I hear you say you want them to be comfortable with being uncomfortable, that's a signal to me in the audience that, you know, you may laugh and you may wonder why you're laughing or if it's okay to laugh, but I'm going to make you think as well.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe learn something. And yeah. I'm down. Kelsey Claire, what do you think?
Well, I was going to talk about with that Sarah Silverman quote and with Jill's comment, like, the idea of personas, like there's things that I can say that Andrea probably couldn't say and vice versa. And like, obviously same with Kyle. And there's just like a differentiation and you need to like respect that persona. Like and obviously in our first years of comedy, we're all trying to find our voice on stage and like who we really are. But depending on where I'm going, like sometimes I'll be like, okay, I'm going to be cute today. And then the next day I'll be like, okay, today is like a room I can be angry in or very abrasive or like, you know. I think once you find that like happy medium between all of those voices, like is when you really find your voice. But I would say I'm still working on finding that line.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. Andrea, what do you think?
One of the things that Mark Maron said was that the only thing left that is edgy is to be really vulnerable on stage, which is something that I like really take to heart. My material from day one has just been kind of me navigating like the vulnerabilities that I feel in my life, and I also believe that tragedy plus time equals comedy. I'm going through all these like cliches today. It's great.
Well, some of them have some wisdom in them.
Yeah.
Some of them stick for a reason.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that the biggest thing for me is that I notice if there is a story that I tell, there are a number of stories that I tell about like going through hard things, but in the past. And so I can kind of create, similar to what Kelsey Clare said with a persona, I can kind of create a character out of like my younger self. So if I kind of dissociate a little bit from that person, I can be like, well, this is like something that happened to me. But when I say me, I mean like, not really me, because I'm okay now. But I think if I am kind of towing the line into anything that is still really troubling me, then that is when people get uncomfortable. And to talk a little bit about whether I'm okay with people being uncomfortable, I feel like from an artistic standpoint, I don't care how they feel. I do it because that's the way that I want to do the joke. But from a being in the scene doing comedy every week, I want people to laugh at me and I want people to like me. So it is a little bit of a conflict.
Okay. And, you know, you have worked in different genres. I mean, all of you have this sort of interesting careers and backgrounds in comedy. Andrea, I think of your sketch work versus stand-up comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a difference in writing for stand-up comedy when it's you and a microphone and an audience,
mm-hmm,
versus writing for a sketch, which is you may be playing a character, you may be part of a group? Can you feel more comfortable writing material for sketch that is tougher or more blunt, or is there no difference to you?
I absolutely think that there's a difference. I was working briefly with Canary in a Coal Mine, and
I've seen you in there.
Yep. And we wrote a sketch where someone who was really slim was being really down on himself about like what he'd been eating and how much weight he'd gained, and everyone was kind of turning to him being like, oh yeah, you're looking real bad, you're like real fat, and like my character was like, oh, like, yeah, I'm really fat too, like all this self-deprecating stuff, and everyone was like, no, because that's kind of the way that people respond.
You mean that's the way people respond to people about weight issues?
Yeah, if you're a fat person and you talk about being fat, a lot of people are just going to be like, no, you're not. Like, you're beautiful. You're perfect just the way you are. Whereas to someone else, to someone that was average size, they would respond with like, yeah, how are you going to lose some weight? It was really interesting.
I'm so uncomfortable, and I wanted to laugh, and this is everything that I've dealt with, like all the questions in the last half hour.
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't want to laugh at that.
It's totally okay if you laugh. It's a weird thing. It's strange.
God, you're funny, and I just learned something. But go ahead.
But that's not probably something that I would feel comfortable talking about in stand-up, because that is saying something about how I'm uncomfortable and continue to be uncomfortable, which is something that a lot of audiences would prefer to avoid.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Let me grab Bill in Brighton on the phones. Go ahead, Bill.
Thank you very much, Evan. I am fascinated with comedy in the sense that what is comedy in one medium may not be comedy in another medium. A good example of this is Charles Adams, a famous cartoonist of The New Yorker, for his dark, gallows-like, macabre humor. And by the way, he slithered in and out of medical institutions his whole life. But if I were to describe to you over the phone what I saw in that cartoon, you might cut me off. You have to look at the cartoon to get the humor. The same is true in modern day with Gary Trudeau. With Gary Trudeau, his satire can be so biting and vicious that I know there were some papers, I don't know if it's true today, but they refused to put him on the comic section, and they put him in the op-ed political section. So I'm fascinated with what's comedy in one medium may not be comedy in another. And I don't know if all of you are young enough to remember Jonathan Winters, who went through several mental institutions, but trying to turn himself into a helicopter was one of the funniest things I've ever seen. So that's my comment to your group.
Bill, thank you for the phone call. We want to jump in on that.
Yeah, I think that's kind of that whole phrase, like, oh, well, you had to be there, because, like, it's, you know, it's all about context. I would, I think that all of us have kind of acted and done other modes mm-hmm. of comedy or performance, but I would say that when you're on, when you're doing stand-up, and kind of going back to what we were talking about with, like, what's okay to say and what Jill kind of commented on, but, like, masking your words is so that you don't hit those buzzwords like Sarah Silverman mentioned. So, like, if you just say, like, oh, this joke's about Donald Trump, like, you could lose half of the audience. Mm-hmm. But if you just make a general comment, like, it could be really funny for people who might not usually have been receptive to that, which I think is a really... like magical thing in stand up. And I think it goes with what he's saying. Like, it's just how you present it. And it could be a do or die kind of thing, you know.
And let me follow up with you on that, Kelsey Clary. And I'm late for a break, but I want to squeeze this in because it's on my mind here. You know, you've talked about PTSD, what, you know, when a rape joke may be more acceptable than not, or what context, who's telling it.
Yeah.
How much then, as we talk about whether the construction of comedy is for the constructor or for the audience, how much are you also thinking, I also have to be careful here because PTSD is real. There could be survivors in that. I don't want to trigger anybody. How much are you thinking about that?
Well, I actually thought about that a lot when I was putting on disclaimer, don't grab my pussy, which was like a very, is that okay?
I think we pre-cleared it because the president said it, but I warned you that that's the name of the show, and there's a reason for that.
Yeah, and obviously we were going off of some comments made by our current president, and I had to, all of the money for that show went to Restore Sexual Assault Services, which is a program out of Planned Parenthood of Western New York. They're really great. I volunteer for them. We advocate for rape and sexual assault survivors. And, like, you have to be careful with that because the people you're dealing with inherently are probably victims or survivors of that thing. And they could have heard that word during their assault, and it could be triggering. But and I was talking to the director of crisis services in Buffalo because we're putting the show on there. And she was – I was, like, I was really surprised because sometimes people are, like, we don't want to use this word because it's a trigger. And she was, like, well, that we understand and – we should, like, make everybody else understand that there is complexity to everything that you say and do. So if you can understand the complexity and that this is a satirical title, then it's okay to say it. If you say it in the way that Donald Trump said it, it's not okay. And I think that's really hard for people to understand a lot. But it's very important when you're kind of navigating these things.
Have audience members ever come up to any of you guys after a show and said, that was over the line, or I was offended, that was inappropriate? Has that ever happened with you? Kelsey Clare?
I've had some men be mad at me. There's a whole Reddit thread about me, about my show, about things I've said. I think it's reactive. I think that there is definitely a great conversation that I could have with somebody, that guy included, that, like, was like, sex and rape are the same thing, and they're not. tell me not. I think there's a great conversation we could have that he could learn a lot. Maybe I could even learn a lot. But, you know, I think right now people are just very ready to, like, rage, you know. And I think that goes for both sides of the spectrum. But
are men, generally speaking, more fragile?
Yeah, when it comes to, I mean, just in like what you're asking me right now, I'm sorry.
But
I mean, more easily offended, more saying, you can't say this about, you can't, you get
no,
more of that
definitely.
From them.
Okay. Yeah, because I mean, what we're talking about right now is like a triggering PTSD. Like I could relive one of the worst things that's ever happened to me because of a joke somebody said. And they're like, well, you really need to calm down about it. But then if I say something like, well, all men, they're like, that was really hurtful. It's like, are you serious? Like, it's all about paradigms and again, complexity. So, yeah, in my experience, yes, definitely. Certain men more so than not. But.
Okay. Andrea?
I don't get that often. I don't get people saying that my stuff is over the line. I do get a lot of, like, that really happened to you? And then, like, I'm so sorry. And I'm like, this is not the conversation I want to have after a comedy show.
Do you tell people that, or do you say thanks?
Yeah, I do. I tell people that it's all real. It's all based on stuff that's happened. But then I try to be like, isn't that like funny? As opposed to like, I'm very traumatized.
If I could, I don't mean to interrupt, but the best is when a guy comes up to you and he feels really sad for you, and like he feels for you, but you're almost then consoling him your horrible.
Like him feeling bad
all the time.
Like, it's gonna be okay. Like women are raped every day, but like you're gonna be fine. Like it's crazy.
Like you have an out-of-body experience. Like, what am I doing with this person here?
Right.
Like, just why am I? Yeah. Okay. Kyle, what do you think?
I've never actually had somebody come up to me with regard to like talking about. I think maybe somebody like what Andrew said, I'd be like, "Wow, you're really that's really good what you're going through right now." But yeah, I mean, again, I try to present what I'm going through in a very relatable way, with maybe some dark twists or really silly twists, just to kind of get everybody on the same page. So I'm not really, you know, stepping over a line or. I mean, because I talk about anxiety and depression, I think definitely with PTSD, you could definitely potentially trigger somebody. But with what I talk about, I mean, the closest would probably be if I'm joking about self-harm. But that's just because I've gone through that kind of stuff. So I feel comfortable making fun of it because it's something I struggle with.
All right, we're very, very late. Let's get our only break of the hour, and we're going to come back with our guests, Kyle Baker, Kelsey Claire Hagen, Andrea Springer. When we come back, they'll tell you where you can see more of their work, because we've been talking about their work. we'll also talk about, you know, pressures and how that could be. You know, some people in comedy feel a constant pressure to be on all the time. Wow, I just knocked off. I keep doing this. We need some repair here. Some folks feel a pressure to be on all the time, especially if you're quote unquote trying to make it, or you know, you want your work to be successful. And if that can play into pressure or not, there's a lot more to discuss. We'll get more of your phone calls and questions and comments as well. Ron on Twitter will get your comment as well. All coming up on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on The Next Connections, what the science community is saying about TRAPPIST, that series of 7 Earth-like planets all orbiting the same star. Is that our future home? Then in the second hour, it's the story of the Latin American version of the Dakota Access Pipeline. But unlike the Dakotas, the Sarayaku won their battle, and they're being honored by the Rochester Committee on Latin America. We'll talk about it. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Let's get to your phone calls. Law in Rochester. Go ahead, Law.
Hey, what's going on, everybody?
Hi, Law.
Hey.
Hey. I wanted to call for 2 reasons. First is I'm bipolar, and I do improv comedy mostly. I've done a bunch of stand-up in the past, and I just really loved what you guys are doing today. So as someone who – I also work as an arts advocate, kind of using – comedy to get the word out about this stuff, like to raise awareness. So that's like kind of another way that comedy could be therapeutic or be therapy is I can do jokes about this stuff and my experiences and open up what I've actually gone through to people who have never experienced it. And that's huge because then we're laughing at it together and they can understand it. And advocacy is a huge part of that work.
All right. So you say something nice to start. There's usually a but here, but go ahead, Law.
No. It's kind of a half a butt. Whenever talk shows in general, not just yours, Evan, but whenever talk shows have comics on and we kind of dissect humor or something about humor, like it kind of tends to do this thing where, especially this one, because this is like a serious dark thing, like everybody kind of sounds like you're just a bunch of bummers right now. So in a weird way, I wanted to just say as an audience member, as a supportive audience member in Rochester who's gotten a chance to see everyone who's in the room with you right now, to just encourage the rest of your audience to get off their couches or out of their situations and go support local stand-up because these guys are awesome and you will laugh at their stuff. And you can go up to them at the end and tell them any number of the fun, crazy things that they're talking about, but they've worked hard to construct jokes and they know how to tell a joke. At the end of the day, if we're not funny, we're not doing our job.
All
the people you have in the room with you right now are very, very funny people. So I just want to give them a big boost.
Thank you, Law. That's fair. That's fair. And you know what? The host could have done a better job making sure you understand. These people are really good at what they do. And you will laugh. Fair point. Thank you, Law. And in fact, let's go around the table and why don't you guys tell our audience where they can generally see you or find your work or what you want them to know. Kyle Baker?
Besides a Wendy's drive-thru, you could find me, you know, I go to all the open mics. I haven't done shows in a while. I just took a brief break, but I'm on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, Bulky Reek. It's B-A-L-K-Y-R-E-E-K. It's just an anagram of my name. Because of the depression, I actually been doing a little more like Instagram weirdness just because it's easier for me to get something out really quickly. But yeah, hopefully I'll be on some of these shows soon. I'd really like that.
Oh, Kelsey Claire Hagen.
I actually have a show tomorrow. It's called Two Feminists Walk Into a Bar with, like, the lovely Madeline Smith, who's my best friend and a great comedian as well. You should look her up. We have headliner Andrew Youngblood coming in from Dallas. It's at Skylark Lounge at 8 p.m. tomorrow.
Skylark Lounge.
Skylark Lounge.
Which is where?
It is on Union Street. Okay. And then this weekend, I'm going to be putting on...
Don't grab my blank.
DGMP is like what I like to call it. Buffalo, where we're raising money for crisis services. That's in Buffalo. I don't think any of you are from Buffalo, but spread the word. But if you want to follow any of that like brand, it's all over Facebook. It's always DONTGRABMYPU88Y. So, because Gmail doesn't like that word either.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so, you can look me up. My full name is Kelsey Claire Hagen, Kelsey Claire Hagen Comedy online. I'm always producing shows. Most of them are fundraisers. I think it's really important to take your art and give back to the community, especially right now.
Andrea Springer?
Well, every Thursday I host a comedy open mic at Brew Coffee at... 8 p.m. And I'm also doing a couple shows later this month, mostly at distilleries and breweries.
Nice.
I don't know how that happened. It's just like that's where I'm going to be this month. So who knows? I'm going to be at doing a show on the 15th. I'm doing a show later in the month. I don't have everything right. But if you follow me on Twitter, it's SPR. INGSTA, which is Springsta. I know it's embarrassing. I'm embarrassed now. But I put details up about my show. You can also find me on Facebook. It's Andrea Springer, and you'll definitely know where I'm doing stuff and when I'm doing it.
I was gonna say to our audience members, if you want to check out shows, there is a Rochester Comedy Facebook page. So if you're curious about shows or open mics or anything, people are constantly posting and updating in it. So
all right, so. Let's talk just a little about whether you ever feel pressure to, you know, to be on, to be funny. I actually have to say, and I'll kind of do a little inside baseball here. I'm not a big fan of talk shows or, you know, interview shows where you've got somebody in comedy and it's like, now be funny. You know, I mean, and I never want guests to feel that way. I don't usually think it comes off very well. Mm-hmm. I think that puts undue pressure. I actually think the audience gets a little uncomfortable with that. Robin Williams was sort of always performing, but that was sort of in his DNA. Mm. Whereas I like hearing about process. I like hearing about creation. But sometimes there's this idea that, oh, you're in comedy? Oh, be funny. You know, tell us a joke.
And, yep.
And you know, especially when you're dealing with, you know, serious things, complex things in your own life, if that can be compounding at all. I mean, Andrea, do you feel any, do people meet you and go, oh, comedy, huh? Like,
yeah,
hey, be
all
funny
the time.
Now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah? Yeah, definitely. That happens to me a lot. And like I said, and we talked about, like, I do have anxiety, I have depression. That's a thing that makes me really anxious because then I'm like, oh, I have to do it or they won't like me. And if I screw it up, then they also won't like me. Which is just like a thing that my brain is telling me, and it's not true. But it's a situation where if somebody recognizes me, like at Wegmans from a show, like it's really just like they come up, they're like, ah, like tell me a joke or whatever, and I'm like, I'm just like buying a pint of ice cream like for myself to eat. Like there's your joke.
Kelsey Claire.
I've noticed when I tell people I'm a comedian, then like everything I say, they're like, "You're hilarious." I'm like, "I didn't." That was like, I literally just
not
said
a joke.
Like, "Yes, yeah." They were like, "Oh my god, do it again," which I think is really disingenuous. I think we all know people in the scene who are like always on, and it's hard to connect with them because when you go on stage, like you're really kind of in a sad way, although my therapist says, don't do this. You're pleading with a group of people, like, love me. Like, this is who I really am. And, like, I need you to laugh and accept me, like, to an extent. Hopefully that's not the only reason we do it. But, like, if you're doing that in a relationship with somebody or, like, with a friendship, it's like, wait, I just want to, like, know who you are in real life. Like, yeah. Please, like, there's good and bad. So, we're all sad. Like, we all have, like, sad cry. We're all, like, writing our jokes, like, through, like, mascara streaks and stuff. Like, we, like, there's two sides to every coin.
Yeah, I mean, it must be exhausting to be on the receiving end of that. I also think we all probably know somebody in our life who thinks they're always going to be funny or can't ever really have a serious conversation. And I find those conversations exhausting as well.
Yeah.
Like, can we just talk here?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I can't imagine being in your shoes when people want you to be performing all the time. Mm-hmm. Kyle?
I really don't. I mean, my friends and family know I do it, but like if I meet somebody, I don't say that I participate in comedy. There are a lot, like you guys do a lot more than I do and are more active and travel. So I don't, it's just a weird thing. Like I don't, it feels weird for me to say I'm a comedian. I mean, it's not my main source of income. I mean, one day I would really love to do something in writing or performing. But at this point, just the other day, like when people started to find out, I got really irritated because more and more people kept asking me, you know, those questions about, you know, tell me a joke. But like the second sentence after somebody introduced me to someone was, oh, Kyle's a comedian. I went, oh God, here we go.
Happened to me at work too.
Yeah.
Well, Stephanie in Fairport writes to us to say, I just wanted to disagree with your guest that said comedy always comes from having hard times in your younger life and that it's hard to be funny if you've not had a tough life. Although humor is more natural to some people than others, a sense of humor is definitely something that can be learned, and I think humor should be taught in schools right from early elementary because having a good sense of humor is a very important personality trait. The problem is that teachers themselves often need to improve in this area. This should be taught in colleges where students are becoming teachers. Stephanie in Fairport.
Do you mind if I jump in?
Okay.
I think Farrah Fawcett was asked this a couple of years ago, and it was like, well, like, pretty women can't be funny. And she was like, no, like, that's not true. I see exactly what you're saying, Andrea. Like, I think that, and that argument was like, oh, well, some women have to, like, compensate because blah, 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 which is a very sexist ideology. But I see where you're coming from, which is a different place in that, like, with struggle comes an appreciation for humor. But, someone came up to me after a show I did, and they were like, I can't believe you're hot and funny. And I was like, what? Like, I was like, first of all, did you not listen to my whole set? Because I don't know why you would think I would, like, appreciate that comment. Like, I don't know why. Like, oh, thank you, Dad. Like, I love you, too. Like, why? But, I think there is exceptions, but... I don't know. I think, like, my compensation has been from, like, trying to seek validation from men for a lot of my life, and it sucks, and, like, that's why I'm in therapy. But, but yeah, I don't know.
Men are born with bad pickup lines that if we don't have it surgically removed, we'll say things like that. And then you go, like, what did I do?
Get that on lock.
Ron writes to us on Twitter and says, no subject is off limits for comedy, but comedians should be prepared to be called out for being mean-spirited or punching down. That's true.
Yeah. I don't think any of us, like, go out and are like, this group of people sucks. Like, I think we're very respectful. Like,
I've got a little segue, and I ride around to comedy shows, and I'm like the PC police. So.
Yeah, Andrew's very good.
I actually haven't heard a single thing this hour that would make me think that our guests think that being mean-spirited is a good idea. I think truth is what they're aiming for, and sometimes truth is uncomfortable. And I don't think Ron is interpreting that either. I think Ron's just pointing out. But I think everybody agrees on that. But this is a good segue to ask you guys, as we start to wrap the hour, what is funny to you as an observer? What do you like to see? Andrea Springer, you know, when you're not having to perform and beyond,
right.
What do you love to see? What's funny?
I think that... watching people try to have perfect relationships with each other is funny because there's like a disconnect between what they want and what is happening to them. Like, I'm really talking about a lot of sitcoms, and I'm talking a lot about people talking about their relationships, whether it be a friendship or a family relationship. I think in a certain way, watching people continuously do this like Sisyphus thing where they like keep trying and then like it falls back and then they like push up and keep trying. Because like nothing's ever gonna be perfect, and I think it's funny to watch people try to be perfect.
Okay. Kelsey Clare?
I do love making people uncomfortable to like an appropriate extent. And like talking about things that women, I'm using air quotes right now, I know you can't see me, but that women aren't supposed to talk about. So I talk about my period a lot. I talk about abortion and I talk about porn. Like, that's something that men can talk about all the time, it seems like. And women are, it's like, oh my God, this is new. This is trendy. It's like, no, we've been here the same amount of time as you. So yeah, that's my favorite, is just like coming in hard and strong with that stuff.
And when you see people in comedy, when you're a paying member of the audience, that's kind of what fires you up as well?
Yeah, definitely. Also, happy International Women's Day. Just a side note, yeah.
Right. Kyle Baker.
For me, I actually really, I really enjoy, like, if I really want to laugh out loud, like, I just love absurdist humor. I just love things that maybe a lot of people might not understand, or even myself might not understand. I mean, that's a major influence on me was, you know, like Zach Galifianakis and Marie Bamford. They were very experimental, absurdist comedians. And like Tim and Eric were things, it's like they take the mundane and they sort of make it a funny nightmare.
Well, I'm going to pick up on what Law said earlier, which is that our guests are very talented people and I think worthy of your time. And Kyle Baker, Kelsey Clare Hagen, Andrea Springer, good luck to you guys. And thank you for sharing your insights, kind of diving in on some tough but important stuff. And I think it'll give us a little more context when we all come out and pay to see you guys perform and work here in Rochester. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
My thanks to Rob Braden, the engineer, Megan Mack, who should have been hosting the show because she is one of the funny real people you meet in Rochester as well. And to you for listening. And we'll talk to you Thursday on Member Supported Public Radio.